KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Welcome, Dr. Berry. Nice to see you.
Updates on the COVID situation. Unfortunately, the news is not good at this point. We are seeing incredibly rapid rises in cases throughout the country. If you've been following the graphs online, you see just a straight upward trajectory. And that, unfortunately, is starting to apply locally as well. Nationally, cases are up 215%. Right now, we're diagnosing more than 650,000 cases each day in the United States. Hospitalizations are unfortunately also up 80%, and deaths are rising as well. Statewide, we're seeing a very similar trend. In Washington State, COVID-19 cases are up 249%. Hospitalizations are up 95%. ICU capacity is becoming critical once again. So we're seeing the amount of ICU beds available in the state getting back into the low 30s. And so for your healthcare worker colleagues, when we're seeing very sick people, it's very hard to find a space to send them. I know I was on a call this weekend on Sunday trying to find a bed for a man, and we had one negative pressure bed we could find for him in the state. And so that's the level of strain we are experiencing right now. In Jefferson County, cases are rising quite rapidly as well. Right now, we are up to a case rate of 795 per 100,000, which is the highest we have ever been. Our total cases are 1,825. But we are experiencing an outbreak at Olympic Corrections Center, so that is driving some of those cases. We certainly have seen COVID-19 move very quickly through those spaces. 40 of our most recent cases are Olympic Corrections Center, so that does play into those numbers. But we are still seeing quite a bit of transmission in our community. Currently, we have 3 people hospitalized for COVID-19, which is a rise from where we have been recently. But we are not at the level of critical hospitalization numbers that we're seeing in neighboring counties. And that is really largely driven by the proportion of our population who is vaccinated. We are seeing that there are frequent breakthrough infections, so people who have been fully vaccinated getting COVID-19, but we are not seeing that group be hospitalized at the same rate that we are seeing in the unvaccinated. Still, vastly disproportionate number of our hospitalizations are in people who have not completed their vaccine series. In neighboring Clallam County, we were up to 7,624 cases. The case rate in Clallam is 2,072 per 100,000, which is also the highest that we have ever seen. We have 11 folks currently hospitalized for COVID-19 in Clallam and have had 82 deaths. We've not had any new deaths in Jefferson County. When I look at the OMC hospitalization numbers, which we tend to have higher numbers there because of a lower rate of vaccination, 90% of those in the hospital today are unvaccinated. And so we're still really seeing a disproportionate strain on the hospital system for those who are unvaccinated. If you are fully vaccinated, you are well protected against the worst of COVID-19. We're seeing good protection against hospitalization for folks who are fully vaccinated and even better protection for those who are boosted. So it really does still make a huge difference. And right now, when the healthcare system is critically strained, it's incredibly important to get vaccinated to reduce the strain on that system. We are seeing shortages of beds statewide. We certainly have shortages of staff. We're seeing shortages of tests and shortages of medications. Unfortunately, we are expecting that we're going to reach peak COVID-19 transmission at the end of January, which means we are going to see peak hospitalizations mid-February. That means that as crazy as these numbers sound right now, we anticipate that they will be worse for the next couple of weeks, and the strain on our healthcare system will be worse for actually even longer. What does that mean to the general person? That means that we have to do what we can to reduce transmission in our community and to reduce the strain that we put on that healthcare system. That means getting vaccinated. That means wearing a mask. It also means limiting your social contacts. We have more COVID-19 in our community right now than we have ever had in the entirety of this response. And so that means now is a very good time to start scaling back social contacts, to limit your time in indoor spaces with other people. I remember very well the time in the very beginning of the pandemic when you might have heard on some news outlets that said people said, okay, if we all quarantine for 2 weeks, this will be over. That actually never came from my department. That was not true. But what is true is the worst of this, we expect this wave, the worst of it to be throughout January. And so if all of us can limit our social contacts for the rest of this month, we can limit how bad this gets. And we can really do a lot of work to prevent transmission in our community in that way. So that's one of the biggest things that I would recommend for our community. The other thing to know is your healthcare system, the healthcare system that's serving all of us, is critically strained already and will be more so in the next 2 weeks. And so that means that how we access that system matters. We can access that system, of course, when we need medical care, we should. But know that there will be less appointments available. Wait times will be longer. Wait times on the phone will be longer. None of that is because the person who's picking up that phone isn't trying. It's because this system was not built to handle this level of disease. And so just know that the strain on your healthcare workers is intense. They're doing everything that they can. Please try to be kind, be understanding, and only utilize the services that you need. So that means if you are ill, but not severely ill, if you're not having trouble breathing, you're not having chest pain, if you're not having those kind of critical needs for the emergency department, we really need to keep all of that healthcare out of the emergency department. The emergency departments are working overtime right now. And unfortunately, our healthcare system has been strained for 2 years. Our healthcare workers have been carrying the brunt of this these waves after waves for 2 years, and many of them have been demoralized by that. And so we've lost some of them. Folks have quit the profession and not come back. So our healthcare system was running on fumes before this wave, and now they're getting hit harder than they ever have. And so we need to understand that that means there will be shortages for us when we want to access healthcare care. It won't be as fast as we're used to it being. We may not be able to access everything that we want. And we just have to know that that's the reality. That's the reality because of what has gone on for the last 2 years. But we can get through this, and we can do our part to get through this. So vaccinations, masks, limiting those social gatherings, and being thoughtful about how we access the healthcare system. We do still need to get our medical care. We need our primary care to be running well. We need our chronic medical conditions well taken care of so that they don't get worse and don't have us needing those hospital beds. But we need to be thoughtful about how we access that. Part of that is testing. So with this dramatic rise in cases that we have seen nationwide, there has been a strain on the testing infrastructure like none we have ever seen. So even if our federal government had done a better job at investing in testing sooner, this would still be too much. So when it comes to testing at this point, we are really recommending prioritizing testing to people who are symptomatic and people who are exposed. We no longer have the testing capability to do the kind of testing we could do even just a month ago to make sure our gatherings were safer, things like that. We just don't have those kind of tests. There's a critical shortage of antigen tests and of PCR capability. So we just got notification from the University of Washington that they will now only process PCRs for people who are symptomatic or exposed. They just don't have capacity to do anymore. So we all have to understand that testing shortage. And part of that, certainly we have been faced with this testing shortage in Jefferson County for a while. So I want to give some folks some guidance on how to use those tests. So I know many folks are trying to access antigen tests and struggling to access them. If you do get a hold of an antigen test, one of the more common questions I get is, what do I do? When is the right time to test? And so if you are sick, the right time to test is right when you get sick. So within the first day or so of symptoms, that's the best time to get tested. But if you've been exposed and you have one test to use to figure out whether or not you've got COVID-19, the best time to test after you've been exposed is about 3 days after you've been exposed. Don't get tested immediately because you might not have a high enough viral load to trigger a positive test. You might have a false negative in that very first day or two. So if you wait 3 days, if you don't have any symptoms, you're more likely to catch that positive. And of course, if you are very sick, if you're having a significant respiratory illness and you tested negative the first time, but it was right at the very beginning, if you can test again, we recommend that you do. Acknowledging that many of us don't have the ability to test again because we don't have the tests available for it anywhere in our community. And so if that happens, if you find yourself sick and you can't get another test to figure out if you have COVID, the best thing to do is to stay home while you're sick, which we should do anyway, because we don't want to give anyone else a viral illness who's now going to have to wonder if they have COVID and go through that same, all those steps. So if you're sick, it's really, really important to stay home and prevent transmission to other people until you're better. And we do have testing available for folks who are symptomatic through Jefferson Healthcare. We have testing available through the health department at this time for folks who are close contacts of those who were exposed. And in South County, where we know there's shortages of testing, we have testing through the health department for those who have symptoms as well. So we are still able to take care of those most critical folks who need testing, but it is short. It is tight right now. And that is most of my updates for now. And I know there's lots of questions from KPTZ, but what questions do we have from the commissioners before we move forward?
Mayor Kate, do you have questions for Dr. Berry?
I have an easy one. I'm curious, I've heard people talk about swabbing the throat with a home antigen test is effective. Would you recommend that at this point?
There is some early data suggesting possible increased sensitivity if we combined a nasal and a throat swab. What I would say is it's very early data, very small numbers, and the nasal swabs are still really good. And you're very unlikely to be able to successfully swab your own throat, actually. So a good throat swab that we do in the clinic involves the very back of your throat, and you just don't do that to yourself. So if you're doing home testing, I would really stick with nasal swabs. But the key is to make sure you're doing a full 10 seconds on both sides. I've seen there's a variety of antigen tests available. And if you look at their instructions, some of them say 5 seconds. That's not enough. You need 10 seconds on both sides. This is particularly important if you're swabbing a child. So sometimes when we get false negatives in kids, if you have toddlers that you've swabbed before, part of that is that they don't love it. But you do really need a good sample in order to make sure that you really can trust it. Of course, it's just in the nair, just the lower part of your nose. We don't want anyone going deep in anybody's nose outside of a healthcare setting. But if you can try to get a good 10 seconds in both sides, you're gonna get your best sample. And then the other key thing is that you need to read it at 15 minutes. At 15 minutes or later and within 30. I've heard of some folks who will just see that it got to the, you'll see it flow up until it gets to the control line and they don't see one on the test line and they're like, okay, good, I'm negative. You really need to give it that full 15 minutes to develop to make sure that you're catching any viral particles that are in there. And just know that no test is 100% sensitive. There will always be some that get through, but we're doing everything we can to minimize transmission. We can't stop transmission right now. There's far too much COVID. But testing if you're symptomatic is a really key way to minimize that transmission. The other thing along the testing front, just to kind of keep that ball rolling, is you may have heard from the president and now from our governor about some steps to try to increase testing access. We are excited to hear about those. We have not received any of those tests yet, though. There was some confusion after the governor's press conference. Folks thought that we had them at the health department right now. We don't yet. As soon as we get them, we will make sure they get into the community immediately, but we don't have them yet. We do have our baseline supply that Jefferson County has purchased to make sure that we are able to support folks. But that kind of free 2 boxes for everybody kind of thing, we don't have that yet. So hang tight on that, and we will definitely put out messaging as soon as we get it.
A couple quick questions about, you know, for us post-COVID folk, how we can, you know, support the public health effort as well as we can. One is, what's the current recommendation for isolation, and is that impacting our healthcare capacity at all? Or do we have, I mean, how are we doing in the healthcare workers and COVID?
So the best for the general public, if you've had COVID, the best thing to do is to follow the 10-day isolation. That's safer. Up to 30% of people are still shedding positive virus at day 5. So if you are able to stay home for 10 days, that is the best option every time. If someone's working in a critical infrastructure space, often you'll start interacting with your HR, with your employee health. They'll probably interact with us, and we'll talk about whether or not it makes sense to bring you back earlier. But for the vast majority of folks, 10-day isolation is the way to go. When it comes to the healthcare system, there are some different isolation and quarantine guidelines. But just to be clear, in case anyone's nervous, in Jefferson County, your healthcare workers still isolate for 10 days if they're positive. We have not brought anybody back at 5 because that's a really risky move that we do in crisis capacity situations. We are not in crisis capacity here. But what we are doing is we are working on folks who have been exposed who are not positive, doing very frequent testing to get them back into the workforce. So that involves testing daily, actually, for several days to make sure that they can come back and not infect their patients and still keep healthcare available to you. So that's kind of the split that we do. Very, very cautious work there. Lots of work on masking and things like that. But the healthcare workers are very good at masking in workplaces.
Great, thank you.
General public, 10-day isolation. Best thing is to quarantine for 10 days too, if you can. The longer quarantines, the longer isolations are going to be safer for you.
And even if you have some mild symptoms that persist after that 10 days, you're okay. What about if you have, you know, some symptoms, you know, on day 14, you get a head cold or something? Should you test again? I mean, with our overburdened testing capacity and everything, is it pretty clear you don't have COVID at that point? Or?
Good question. So yes, if you are one of the many folks in our community who's recently been diagnosed with COVID, you might be wondering how this all interacts with you. We do know that unless you are immunosuppressed, you really only shed viable virus for 10 days. So if you've completed your 10-day isolation, you're good. Many people do have some lingering symptoms after day 10, but they're not shedding viable virus. They're not dangerous to other people. And so it's okay to leave your isolation. Of course, keep masking, because we all should when we're in indoor spaces. But we don't think that you're shedding viable virus after that time, unless you're immunosuppressed. So if you're on chemotherapy, things like that, that's a different deal. That's a 20-day isolation, and we'll help you through that at the health department if that happens. As far as prevention of subsequent infection, we are seeing shorter time periods between original infection and subsequent infection with Omicron, primarily Delta to Omicron. That's the only one we have data on right now. But we do feel confident that you are protected for at least 30 days after your infection. So in the next 30 days after you've had COVID, if you get the sniffles again, it's not new COVID. It may be something else. There are other respiratory viruses around, so you should still stay home if you're sick, but it's not COVID.
Thank you.
No worries. Good question. All right.
I have one question. I've gotten a couple of phone calls from people, and I feel like having this short conversation out loud might be good. Couple calls about how many people are in our hospital with COVID right now. Well, you just reported there are 3. But it comes from a place of people who are sick, not feeling like they should go in the hospital because there's COVID in the hospital. Mm. And I said, I know that our healthcare system is doing a good job of managing COVID cases in the hospital, but would you talk about that for a sec and confirm or deny my claim I've been making to the people who've been calling me?
Yes. So Jefferson Healthcare does a fantastic job at containing COVID in the hospital system. So if you have COVID, there's a lot of things going on to make sure that that stays in that room. So they've got special air purifiers, they're closed rooms, everybody's in really intense PPE. There's a lot of things that we do to reduce transmission in those spaces. And we have had no healthcare associated outbreaks in the hospital setting in Jefferson County. And so if you do need to access medical care for valid needed medical reasons, I don't want you to be afraid to access that care. They do a really good job at taking care of folks who have COVID and taking care of folks who don't, and not intermixing those two. So I don't want you to be afraid to access the care. And if you do need it in consultation with your doctor, if your doctor says, hey, we really need you to come in because I'm worried about your heart or whatever, listen to your doctor. Your doctor is the right person to tell you whether or not you need to be in the hospital. What we are trying to avoid is something that we've seen at least in Clallam County, which is folks just showing up at the hospital because they have COVID. And it's scary. It's scary to get a COVID diagnosis. But if you're not having trouble breathing, not having chest pain, not having kind of those critical things, COVID alone is not a good reason to come to the ER. That's what we want to prevent. But if you need medical care, we absolutely want you to get that medical care. And your healthcare system can still provide it. It's just that the wait times are likely to be longer.
On to the KPTZ list of questions.
Okay. We've been getting a good list of questions. So a couple were about masks, and we've been kind of wading into this a bit. So Omicron is more contagious than the variants that came before it. And so it is a good idea to kind of upgrade your mask at this point, depending on what you're doing. So in most cases, in most settings, most workplaces, something like a surgical mask is going to be your best option for protecting yourself and others from COVID-19 infection. If you're going to be doing higher risk things, so say you are not just going to the grocery store, but you are a grocery store worker, you're going to work there all day, upgrading to a KN95 mask makes sense. Reduce the risk of you contracting COVID-19 on the job. Similarly, if you're traveling, if you're getting on a bus or a plane, things like that. Or if you are a very high-risk person, that's the other time where I'd really think that a KN95 mask is a good idea. So say you are immunosuppressed, you couldn't respond to your vaccine, and you need to go to the clinic and sit in the waiting room for maybe a little longer than you normally would. That's a good time for a KN95 mask. Or any time that you can tolerate a KN95, I think it's a good option for folks. We've had some questions about whether or not you can reuse a KN95 or an N95. You can. We actually studied this when we had the mask shortage for folks who are wearing masks full time in the healthcare setting. And we found if you're going to wear a mask all day, every day, a KN95 or an N95 can last up to 5 days. So you can wear it up to 5 times for full day use. Most of us are not wearing them like that, though. We're wearing them to go into the grocery store. We're putting them down. And so as long as they still have a good seal to your face, they're not dirty, they're not saturated, you can rewear them pretty frequently. But we also aren't in a critical mask shortage right now. So it's okay to replace that mask and rotate it through. And I want to do some other KPTZ questions, but I have to plug in my computer because it's about to die. I apologize. Would Willie mind jumping in and doing your update? And I will be right back.
So it's actually a good segue on Dr. Berry's part, talking about KN95 masks. As part of Governor Inslee's press conference last week, he talked about making tests more available. But he also talked about making high quality masks more available as part of the fight against Omicron. And so throughout the pandemic, we've been supplying cloth masks, thanks in large part to a team of community mask makers who've been making cloth masks both for adults and for kids. And we've been distributing those through local businesses, through grocery stores, schools, et cetera. Well, Governor Inslee, part of his initiative will be making KN95s and N95s available to the general public. So we will be doing some outreach this week. We have a stock of KN95s on hand here at DEM, and we'll be ordering more potentially from the state and we'll be distributing those through our previous channels in local businesses, grocery stores, schools, et cetera. So expect, if you don't have a KN95 or access to those as of quite yet, we'll be looking at making those a little bit more available in lieu of our cloth masks. We'll be making some more high quality masks available through those channels. Expect some communications on that this week. Other than that, other than some a new type of mask distribution for us, just real quick on our clinics. We had 47 5 to 11 year olds in the morning in Chimicum this past Saturday. And let me grab the final tally again. We had a 215 vaccinated for our adult Moderna booster in the afternoon. That is nowhere near our maximum throughput for those large clinics. We are seeing a decrease in demand, both for first boosters and adults. So not just us at our large vaccination clinics, I know the pharmacies are seeing a decrease in demand as well. So for those of you who have been maybe struggling to find a booster, appointments are more readily available than they were at this same time last month. So in local pharmacies, it's out there and you don't have to wait weeks for an appointment like you did previously. We do have a clinic coming up this Saturday down in Quilcene for our South County folks. Follows a similar model. We'll be doing kids in the morning, 5 to 11 year olds, as well as boosters for the 12 to 15 crowd. And then we'll be doing adult Moderna boosters in the afternoon. There's still space in the adult Moderna booster clinic in the afternoon. Currently, the kids clinic in the morning is full and it's waitlist only. But please do, if you want to sign up, please do add your name to the waitlist. We are going to be able to accommodate a number of folks from the waitlist. So don't let that no appointments available message concern you at all. Put your name on the waitlist. We'll be in contact and we'll be able to get a number of folks in that clinic. So please don't hesitate to sign up that way. From there, we were initially planning clinics on the 22nd and 29th, but with this decrease in demand, we really are kind of reconsidering that for the moment. So expect more information following. We're continuing to try to do our best to ascertain the demand and the need out there and schedule clinics appropriately. But again, we've seen a sharp decrease. These were our first clinics in quite a while that failed to fill up. We did 400 people our last afternoon clinic in December, and then half of that this past Saturday. So more information to be determined. In the meantime, if you're looking for a booster, thankfully you can head to the pharmacies without a multiple week wait. Otherwise, we hope to see lots of folks down in Quilcene this Saturday.
Thank you, Willie. I appreciate you jumping in a little bit early. And it's true. So just to wrap up the discussion of masks, the very best mask is one that you will wear continuously. So with the move to KN95 and N95s, if you can tolerate that, that's excellent protection. But for many of us, we don't tolerate an N95 for a long period of time, or people can't hear us. So that's the other time I see is people take them on and off to talk to folks. And if you pull your mask down to talk to someone, it's not doing what we need it to do. So the best is whatever mask will fit your face and that you will keep on throughout the duration of your time when you're around other folks. But now is a really important time to wear those masks in those indoor settings. And I did get one question from a listener asking about Omicron with its increased infectiousness. Are we seeing transmission outdoors? And we are not. We have not seen transmission in outdoor settings. We are just seeing more distant transmission in indoor settings. And so I think the key there is this idea of 6 feet being enough to protect you. That was starting to fade with Delta, but it's really faded with Omicron. So if you are, if you're 6 feet apart and masked, I think that's good protection in an indoor setting. But if you're just 6 feet apart, no masks on, you could certainly be exposed to COVID-19 in that setting. So that's where the mask, that's where this layered protection comes in. That's where spacing, masking, getting vaccinated, all those things work together to protect us. But no, we are not seeing transmission outdoors. If you see me running on a trail in Jefferson County, I'm not wearing a mask because I don't think we're going to get COVID outside. But if we're inside, you will never see me without a mask on. So it's really, really important in those spaces. Got a couple questions about folks who had had breakthrough infections, and what does that mean about boosters? Generally, more protection is good. And so if you have had a breakthrough and you're wondering whether or not to get a booster, if you tolerated your first two doses, it is reasonable and appropriate to get a booster as soon as you have recovered from your infection. You do need to be outside of that 10-day window before you go get your booster. Otherwise, you're contagious, and we don't want you infecting your vaccinator. But after that 10-day period, you can get a booster. We are seeing very good protection, however, from those breakthrough infections in the fully vaccinated. So if for whatever reason you're not able to get a booster immediately, one of the people who wrote was someone who had received monoclonal antibodies, and which normally delays any subsequent vaccination for 90 days. And they were worried about whether or not they were adequately protected. If you've completed a series and had a breakthrough infection, you are likely similarly protected to someone who has received a booster. So I would say you're actually pretty well protected while you wait out that 90 days. The primary reason for that 90-day delay after monoclonal antibodies is the possibility that those monoclonal antibodies interfere with your vaccine, rendering it less effective at protecting you. And you are well protected by your monoclonals, your recent infection, and your prior vaccines. Even if you get a breakthrough infection, it doesn't mean that your vaccine didn't work. Your vaccine is still working to make that infection less severe, shorter duration. It's what's keeping you from getting hospitalized. You may still feel it. I've certainly heard from folks who got a breakthrough and they felt like they had the flu. They felt good and sick, but they didn't get hospitalized. They didn't have terrible things happen to them. And so that means your vaccine is working really quite well. We certainly would prefer for it to prevent all infection, and in many cases, it still does. We are still seeing a disproportionate amount of infections at all among the unvaccinated. We're seeing more breakthroughs among those who are vaccinated but not boosted, and we are seeing some breakthroughs among those who are boosted, though we are actually still seeing very good protection, around 70% protection against any infection at all if you've received your booster. But what happens is if you get a breakthrough infection and you've been boosted, everybody knows, right? So how many of us have heard from a friend of a friend who knew a guy who got their booster and got COVID? So that word spreads. But the fact that you got COVID, if you weren't vaccinated, that's not news anymore. And so it can skew our understanding of our own protection. If you are boosted, you are well protected against general infection, and you are very well protected against hospitalization and death. One person asked whether or not that's true if you are over 65, and it is actually. So our first boosters were in people over 65. So actually most of our booster efficacy data is around people over 65. So that's actually driving these numbers, is people over 65. The other thing that's very hopeful for me is we have had, unfortunately, quite a few outbreaks of COVID-19 in long-term care facilities in Clallam County. And what we are seeing is the boosted folks who in those facilities are getting mildly ill. This is the first time that we've seen folks in long-term care get COVID and not get hospitalized. So that's really hopeful for the strength of the booster to protect even the most vulnerable among us. And so that's good. Couple other things. Let's see. One person had a question about a mask policy at Jefferson Healthcare. I will take a look at it and we'll contact them. So if you are that person, let me know. And I will, I'll keep you updated on the progress of that one. One person asked when we're going to get our free at-home testing kits from the federal government. They've not arrived yet, but when they do, we'll definitely let you know. It's also possible that the federal government will just do the online ordering portal and not involve your local health jurisdiction at all. We'll let you know when we know more, but we don't know yet when they're coming. But we still have them if you're symptomatic or if you're exposed through Jefferson Public Health right now. Okay, a couple other things. We talked about outdoor transmission. So as far as we talked a little bit about saliva tests versus nasal tests. Right now, if you have a nasal swab, use it as a nasal swab. We'll keep following the data on if it would be better to transition to other types of swabs. But right now, it's all about testing at the right time, making sure you test long enough, and then being thoughtful about your symptoms. If you're still sick, it's still important to stay home. We talked a bit about masking. I think that's good. I work as a healthcare provider and I am fully vaccinated and boosted. I did order a couple of at-home COVID tests to have on hand in case of exposure. Now I'm wondering how accurate the tests are. I seem to remember hearing on your update last week, there can be false negatives for those. Those are usually if you're tested too early. Is it better to go in for a test at the health department if I have symptoms? So that's a good question. All of your antigen tests are roughly equivalent for efficacy. So all the ones you can buy over the counter here, those are relatively equivalent. So don't ignore an antigen test you have at home to try to come get one at the health department. If you have an antigen test, that is a precious commodity. And I would use it like it's real. And don't go get a bunch of tests to prove whether or not it's real. We have Binax tests by and large. We also have some other ones at the health department. But anything that's sold over the counter in the United States has to be of high quality. I would be cautious with some of the ones you can get online. There are some scams on Amazon in particular and a lot of price gouging around antigen tests. So I'd primarily focus on the ones that you can get in person as far as what you can trust or brands that you can trust that you can order through online pharmacies, things like that. All right, couple more questions. One person was asking about what counts as a fever when it comes to COVID-19. So generally, to count as a fever in an adult, it's a temperature over 101. But please know that many people with COVID don't ever get a fever. So don't let a fever be a determining factor about whether or not it's COVID. So I think now is a good time to review the symptoms of COVID. COVID can have this classic fever, shortness of breath, flu-like symptoms, but it also can look like a cold. I've unfortunately still heard far too many people who say, well, it's just a cold, so it's not COVID. That's not true if you haven't gotten a test. If you have the symptoms of a cold, it certainly could be COVID. And it is important to get tested and do what you can to access testing during that time to make sure it's not, and to stay home until you're better. Okay, let's see. Some folks were asking about travel plans and whether or not to cancel their trips. And I think that's always a personal decision, but I do think it's important to know we have more COVID in the country right now than we've ever had in the history of the pandemic. And so now is a good time to think about activities that we have planned, whether that's indoor gatherings here, flying, traveling to see other family. For myself and really for everyone, I recommend thinking about dialing those back for the rest of January, at least. We are expecting the peak of this at the end of January. And so things are gonna get worse between now and then. So if you have plans to have large indoor gatherings, say weddings coming up in the next couple of weeks, I would seriously consider postponing those plans if it's going to be indoors or changing them to make them small and outdoor. Now is the really, really a good time to kind of dust off the pod concept that we used a lot during the height of prior surges and really limit our interactions as much as we can and to keep those interactions vaccinated and boosted as much as we can when we're looking at indoor gatherings and travel. I can't decide for you whether or not to travel, but I would be very cautious about travel right now. And especially look at what are you gonna do when you arrive? So what is causing that travel? Are you traveling to go to a wedding, a family reunion, some type of large group of people indoors? That's gonna be pretty risky right now. So best practices would be to delay that. But the good and bad about Omicron, the bad is that we're gonna see dramatic rises in cases and unfortunately significant strains on the hospital system. The good is it burns through really quick. So this is not forever. We should be in a much better space by February. But this next couple of weeks is a time to really kind of batten down the hatches, limit those interactions if you can. I have a friend who got the Johnson & Johnson shot and a breakthrough infection. Should that person get a booster? If they can, they should. Getting a booster is a good idea. It'll increase your protection. We definitely have seen some decreased efficacy from just the single dose of Johnson & Johnson. So getting that booster is good. They likely have some protection from their recent infection as well. But if they tolerated their vaccine, getting a booster on top of that, I think is a good idea at this point. Our household is boosted and we're wondering with the current Omicron uptick, whether it's wise to have unboosted but vaccinated friends over for dinner, unmasked and inside. So that goes to the space of, at this point, remember a month ago before Omicron, we would say, if you had fully vaccinated folks indoors, that's pretty safe. That, unfortunately, that has changed with Omicron. And so now if you're going to have folks over, it's actually really important if you're going to be indoors and unmasked that they be boosted or recently vaccinated. So we're seeing good protection in the kids who completed their vaccine series in the last 6 months. So if you've been very recently vaccinated or if you've been boosted, you have a lot more protection for those indoor gatherings to the extent that you can. Otherwise, transitioning that socialization to an outdoor meetup or some other way that you can still have those close connections, but not an unmasked indoor gathering. And speaking to that, we have seen the approval of boosters for kids 12 and up. So it is important if your kid completed their vaccine more than 6 months ago that they get boosted. That will reduce their risk of a breakthrough infection and help prevent a quarantine in the school setting. In Jefferson and Clallam counties, if you have not been vaccinated in the last 6 months and you've not been boosted, you will likely see your kid move into something called test to stay, where they have to get tested multiple times per week in order to stay in the classroom. If they are boosted, they actually don't have to do that. I think we might have time for one more since we already got Willie in there answering questions. So this one asks about, what is your opinion about dining indoors right now? So it is safer in Jefferson and Clallam to dine indoors than in many other places because it's a fully vaccinated space. But with the amount of cases we're seeing and the amount of breakthrough we're seeing, in the next few weeks, I would recommend supporting our restaurants, but doing so by either dining outside or getting some takeout. That's what my family does because it's, right now is just so intense. The probability of interacting with another person who has COVID in an unmasked indoor space is much higher, even in fully vaccinated spaces, if they haven't verified that the person is boosted. So right now I would support our businesses, but I do so with takeout and by eating outdoors. I wish that weren't the case, but I think that's where we are for the next few weeks. It will get better. Yes, Kate.
Dr. Berry, I'm wondering, maybe we could put out a shout out for the new guidance that public health has put out regarding exposure and testing. And I spent a lot of time distributing that and referencing it myself this weekend. So it might be just a good reminder that that's up to date.
Yes, so we have updated the Jefferson Public Health guidance to largely reflect the CDC guidance, but I think with some important clarifications. There was a lot of confusion in how to interpret the CDC guidance, and hopefully we've tried to make a really clear flow sheet that you can follow to figure out when and if you should isolate and when to get tested. So that's up on our website. We've shared it on Facebook, and we'll try to make sure that it has a very good public presence, but definitely please check in there. Given the sheer number of cases that we're seeing, we are unfortunately not able to complete contact tracing for most people. So if you test positive, it's really important to go there and see what to do. That involves calling your friends if you have been around them when you were positive. Remember, anyone can get COVID. It is not a marker that you've done anything bad. Omicron is incredibly contagious and a lot of us will contract it in the next couple of weeks. And it's really important that we call our friends and let folks know if we contract COVID-19 so that we can reduce the subsequent transmission.
Thank you, Dr. Berry. Thank you. Long list this week. I'm thinking back to when in March of 2020, when my husband and I started a food blog and all the recipes. And last night he's like, I'm getting back out my Irish soda bread recipe. And I was like, oh, it was the sign for me of, you know, limiting our interactions with folks again. So yeah.
And it's hard. No one wants to be here again. But I think the thing to know is we know a lot more about the virus now. We know how to prevent it. And we also know how long this is likely to last. It's not an infinite future of isolating anymore. We expect this peak to be end of January. So kind of batten down for the rest of January, limit those social interactions. It doesn't have to be zero. pods work really well. So having a core group of people who you see indoors unmasked, I think that's fine. But keep it that core indoor group, and then use all those other skills that we've learned over the pandemic to socialize outside, to wear masks indoors if you're outside of your pod, to support our businesses, but to do so with takeout. There are a lot of things that we can do to get through the next few weeks and get through it intact as a community. And we've done it before.
Thank you. Greg, you have another question?
Oh, I mean, just a comment. I'm excited for the clinic down in Quilcene, and we'll definitely be bringing our daughter to get boosted, have an appointment already. And I just wanted to say again, I credit being, you know, partially boosted at the time that I suffered the infection really for the mild symptoms that I had. And I encourage everyone to do everything they can to protect the community. And then one final question from me here is on the other side of the aisle, I guess, so to speak. And that's, I'm happy to go back to pods and really be conservative in the way that we interact with the world, not go and sit down. But is that data driven? If you are boosted and have had an infection in the last month, I mean, I'm just, at a certain point, you're going to have to put it in the rearview mirror. And I'm wondering if for me, for the next month, that point is now, or if it's not.
If you are vaccinated and recovered, yes, actually. I think you are very well protected. You're some of the best protected. So if you experienced it and you've come out the other side and you're more than 10 days, wait that 10 days, then I think you are some of the safest. But you want to make sure that that's only applying for your vaccinated, boosted, and breakthrough infections, not just had COVID. If you had COVID and didn't get vaccinated, you are not that well protected. But if you have completed your vaccine series and had a breakthrough infection, you are pretty well protected. And you want to make sure that that applies to everyone in your family too. So a lot of times we forget our kids. So we may be vaccinated, boosted, all the good stuff, but our kids didn't get anything. So they're still very vulnerable. And so we want to be thoughtful about their exposure. But if you're everybody else, if you have completed your series, not had a breakthrough infection, now is the time to kind of limit those social interactions for a little bit. And then if you've just had an infection and not been vaccinated, same thing, or you can go get vaccinated and you can have the level of protection that Commissioner Brotherton does, and you can start doing more things.
I'll have you over for dinner if you get vaccinated.
I'll make the soda bread, or Ike will make the soda bread. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Berry. I think we are ready to move on to our agenda items. And I think Willie can stay online because you're first up.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And don't forget that a recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. And again, thank you, Dr. Berry. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, Willie Bentz. And thank you all. We'll get through this.